From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's Election Day, and today we are discussing who is voting or not voting in this election. Data show an increase in civic engagement among younger voters, and voting trends vary across different demographic groups. We're going to examine how the New Hampshire electorate has changed since previous elections, and we really want to hear from you today. Did you vote this year? Are you still planning to vote today? Why or why not? If you did, what issues are most important to you? What brought you out to the polls? And if you didn't, why not? Let us know. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also comment on our Facebook page. That's NHPR Exchange. Or send us an email. That's a quick way to get your comments to us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. And before the show, we got this note from David, this voicemail from David.
I just wanted to say that I wasn't going to vote because I'm not a big fan of either of them this year. But what's really important to me is things like the Paris Climate Agreement, our soil health and our air health and our water health. And that's what really matters. And that is probably the only reason I will be voting this year.
That's David's reason for voting. What's yours? We'd love to hear from you. Join the conversation. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. And let's start the show off today with a conversation with Joan Dargy. She is the town clerk in Milford. Joan, welcome to the program.
Hi.
So, Joan, the polls in Milford are open starting at 6 this morning until 8 o'clock tonight. How are things going so far? What are you seeing?
It's going well. At the moment, we're getting about 500, more than 500 voters an hour. I was just looking for my latest update for 9 o'clock. Actually, so in the 3 hours since we've been open, we've had 1,976 voters.
1,976. And how does that compare to previous years, the total, the pace? How does it measure up?
That's at that rate, we're going to have 100% voting if this keeps up. Because at the moment, we have 12,300 voters registered in Milford. We have a single polling place. And we have 3,000 absentee ballots to count.
Wow.
So that leaves about 9,000 voters. And at this rate, it looks like we're going to get pretty close to getting everybody in.
Has the town of Milford ever reached 100% participation?
No.
So.
And our absentee is about 90. Our absentees came in at 95%.
Meaning 95% of those who requested an absentee ballot has
returned
them. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
And we're still collecting some today.
That's incredible. We're hearing reports of nationwide turnout being record-breaking, so it lines up in Milford, of course. How have you prepared for this kind of day? Have you had to staff up as far as poll workers?
We have. Our moderator was able to pull together 120 volunteers.
120. And how does that compare? How many volunteers do you usually have?
Normally about around 80. Between 80 and 100.
Between 80 and 100. Okay, so you've got more people working there. What about lines? How's the line there?
Lines, first thing in the morning, I heard a gentleman come in and he said he waited 45 minutes. But then after that, probably an hour and a half into voting, it was about a 10-minute wait.
Okay, and are you expecting that to be steady throughout the day, 10 minutes or so?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And we've talked a lot on this program and we've heard it on others about voter intimidation and safety at the polls. Can you talk a little bit about the state of things in Milford with respect to voter intimidation and safety?
We were a little bit worried about it, but we haven't seen any of it at all.
Okay. And what would you be looking for if you were trying to keep an eye on things? Well, make sure things stay
you know,
safe?
One of the things we were all a little bit concerned about was people coming in with open carry.
With open carry.
Right, but we haven't seen any of that, and we never have in Milford. So,
okay. I understand there was a bit of a mix-up affecting some absentee ballots, which were sent to you in error. Can you talk a little bit about what happened there?
I received a few absentee ballots from Brooks that needed to go to Brookline. We called the Brookline town clerk, and they came down immediately and picked them up. and we had a ballot from Mount Vernon come to us, which fortunately the Mount Vernon town clerk works in our office, so we just handed it off to her. So that was helpful, and she actually got one of ours.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us a little bit about how absentee ballots have been processed in the town of Milford so far?
At an incredible rate, I can say that. In the last few days, we were accepting about 100 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult in the whole social distancing because there is no room in our town hall. So the last few days have been a little scary, to be honest with you. Because my office is closed to the public because there is no room for more than the three of us, the staff that we have. And so we made it work. I mean, everybody came in, wore masks, and we got them in and out as quick as we could.
Mm-hmm. And so speaking of masks, what's the mask situation like at the polls today? Is everybody seem to be complying with mask wearing at the polls, or is there space outside for people who would rather not wear them?
We have space outside for people who'd rather not wear them, and it's being utilized.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have we actually are set up in three areas today. We have one area for all unregistered voters, and we already processed over 100 by, I want to say, 8 o'clock, new registered voters. So we have a separate area for them, and then we have our 2,000 already registered that we processed this morning, and then we have the non-mask wearing area.
So how long do you think it'll take to count all the votes in Milford? Do you think you'll know by the time shortly after the polls close?
Or will it take you longer? We are furiously processing these absentees as we speak. That's what I was working on when helping out with when I left to be online here.
I'm sorry, we're taking time away from your time dedicated to processing absentee ballots. Well, we won't keep you too much longer, but people out there are curious about when certain places might be able to know when the ballots are done being counted.
So the big thing about the absentees, our absentees happen to have three folds in them. Due to that fact, it's going to take them longer to put through a machine. We have four ballot counting machines, so we've taken one offline, one is being just used for the absentees because when they're folded, they tend to jam the machine a little bit. So it is going to take us some time to process them. But we started processing at 7 a.m., and we have good faith that we will be done not too long after the polls close.
All right. Joan Dargy, town clerk in Milford, thank you very much for speaking with us today. We really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. And have a good day.
Listeners, we'd love to hear from you about why you are voting today or not voting. It's a personal choice, but we'd love to hear what went into your decision. Call us, 1-800-892-6477. Let's talk to Pat in Manchester. Hey, Pat, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My father used to say that if you didn't vote, you weren't entitled to complain.
And so that's why you vote, Pat? So you can complain afterwards?
You bet.
Great. And so how was your voting experience, Pat, or have you not voted yet?
I haven't voted yet.
So you're going to join the line shortly, or?
I am.
All right. And you're voting in Manchester, right? So
yep.
Do you have any sense of how long the lines are in Manchester right now?
I suspect they're fairly long. I'm probably going to wait until lunchtime, after lunch.
Okay. Well, Pat, we appreciate your insight. Thank you very much for calling.
Bye.
Listeners, again, phone number 1-800-892-6477. We'd love to hear your insights on this voting day. We've also got some other folks here with their insights. Joining us now is Kay Kawashima Ginsburg. She's the director of CIRCLE, a nonpartisan research center at Tufts University that studies youth, civic, and political participation. And Dean Lacey, he's a professor of government at Dartmouth and the director of the program in politics and law. Welcome to the both of you.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you. It's good to be here.
So, Dean, let's start with you. What demographics are you especially interested in for this election?
Well, youth turnout, number one. People 18 to 24 tend to not turn out at high rates compared to the rest of the population. But from what I'm hearing, the youth are energized and have greater access to the polls. They've been mobilized. And I would suspect that youth turnout is going to bode well for the Democrats in this election.
Same question to you, Kay. What demographics are you especially interested in?
So we do specialize in young people, but particularly those who have never voted before, because as the previous guest said, it's really important to onboard young people into the electorate. So having first time voters register on the same day election, that's important, but also teaching them about voting in elections. So we care broadly about inclusive and really large electorate of young people, which is about 49 million young people this year under 30.
Wow, that seems like an enormous number. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Dean, would you say that the young people are going to be key in determining how this election goes?
I think so. Young people, well, you could make an argument that every demographic group is key, because this election will be so close in swing states that changing the turnout among demographic groups that tend to support one party or the other will make the difference in the election. That includes seniors, women, people of color, younger voters, first-time voters. Every voting group matters in an election that's likely to be in the Electoral College as close as this one will be.
Mm-hmm. And Dean, I know we don't have any official numbers yet, but how do you anticipate voter turnout this year will compare to voter turnout in previous years?
Well, from what I'm gathering, we may witness the highest voter turnout this century. Voter turnout in American elections depends on whether you measure it as percentage of voting age population. And percentage of voting age population, 55 or 60, 56% would be a very high percentage turnout. You could also measure it as voting eligible population. And that takes voting age population, but eliminates people who are in the U.S. who are non-citizens who can't vote and convicted felons who can't vote in many states. And according to voting eligible population, we hit 62% of turnout in 2008, which was higher than in 2012 or 2016. I'm guessing that percentage will go well over 65% in this election. There were only 139 million votes cast in 2016. And from what I've heard, 90 million votes have already been cast before Election Day.
And so we've got to wait and see how many people actually want to vote in person today.
That's correct.
Yeah. Let's talk to some people who have been calling in. We appreciate your calls. Let's talk to Rebecca in Manchester. Rebecca, thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Oh, I went to the polls early. It was about 7 a.m. in Manchester. It was a little icy out there, but everyone, and there was a little bit of a line, especially actually the line came when you were waiting in line after you'd actually filled out your ballot and trying to get to the scanning machine to put your ballots into the machine. But everyone was very good and very respectful. Everyone was wearing masks. It was just a little icy out there.
And Rebecca, aside from all the obvious pandemic differences, how does voting in this election compare to how you voted in previous elections?
It seems to be very similar, just the masks and people keeping separated from each other.
And Rebecca, since we're having a conversation about demographics, would you consider yourself among the younger voter set?
Yeah.
And are you loyal to any particular party, or do you consider yourself a swing voter?
I am a longtime Democrat. My grandmother would disown me if I voted any other way.
Well, Rebecca, thank you very much for calling. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, Kay, let's turn to you for a moment, because you focus on youth civic participation. Are young people generally more involved politically today than they have been in the past, or are they less involved or involved in a different way?
Yeah, they have been more involved and involved in more ways. So, you know, back in 2008, when it's the last high youth turnout year for presidential election, young people are voting, but usually not doing too many more things. This year, especially starting in 2018, we're seeing upsurge in protests, but they're not replacing that with voting. And then we're also seeing more traditional engagement, like volunteering for campaigns, donating for campaigns, and especially really registering friends and convincing friends to vote. And that's been a huge thing with young people in the last few years. They're not waiting for campaigns to come to young people to say like, hey, you're young, why don't you vote? They're definitely not waiting for that, because they know that the youngest voters are least likely to be spoken to. So instead, they seem to be mobilizing themselves because they already know how to organize, many of them. So they're using social media, being creative because they can't go door to door, and using all kinds of ways to engage people directly. quickly, like searching for people on TikTok and making sure they're seeing that video about how to fill out your ballot, not who to fill out the ballot for, but this is what it looks like. This is how to fill the envelope, how to sign the envelope and send it back. So there's been a lot more help that's coming from friends and peers than just campaigns. So it's been an amazing year.
And is there a particular issue that is motivating young people to get involved this year?
Oh, for sure. So, you know, young people really talk about how intersectional racism is. So they talk about structural racism as well as personal racism and how that affects everybody. And that actually crosses ideology. Even conservative young people acknowledge that racism is a big problem in America, and they want the government and leaders to address that. Same goes for the climate. Your caller talked about this really specifically. It's really important for many millions of young people to really see significant change in how we address climate change and environmental protection, so they feel that it's important, regardless of which party they usually affiliate with.
And do you see any differences in the types of young people who are politically involved today compared with 2016 or other past presidential election years? Difference in types of who's getting involved now?
You know, that's a good question, because in some ways, traditionally, college students were very likely to be engaged, and more so than people that are not in school or just working or having family who are also young. What may be difficult and challenging this year on college campuses is that they are not there in person in many states, so they're actually less likely to be immediately engaged. What it did do, though, was actually expand the digital outreach for all kinds of young people. So we're seeing a lot of diverse young people leading those outreach programs. And whenever you have diverse people leading an organization or movement, you're going to also attract really diverse young people who may have been historically marginalized or felt like they don't belong to a particular group. So we're seeing really upsurge on, for example, saying young people saying they feel like they're part of a movement. And that goes across all racial groups. So that's been huge. Another thing that I would notice that there's been a huge work by women, especially women of color. So there is a bit of a difference between men and women right now about how energized they feel about elections and how much civic engagement they are leading and doing.
And is that across age groups, or is that limited to a particular age group?
So we are still talking about young women right now, but I actually believe that's also true to the older age group from what I've seen.
Okay, thank you for that. Listeners, if you've got a question or a comment, give us a call. The number 1-800-892-6477. And let's talk to Vinny in Manchester. Hi, Vinny. What's your question or comment?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call. I was just calling in because... So I've been up here for about 5 years. I do have a felony on my record. And for the longest time, I did not know that I could vote. I actually didn't vote in the midterms because of that. And I was really upset about it. I guess it was a couple months ago, maybe I heard on NHBR, actually, that if you are not in jail physically, you can vote or something like that. So I looked it up, and I can vote. So I was really happy about that. I'm actually going to register today as well. So I'm on my way there right now. I should hopefully be there in about 30 minutes. Hopefully it's not too long. But my main reason for voting is, you know, I have a 5-year-old daughter, and I'm tired of the, you know, the bigotry and the racism and the sexism that is just, you can't not see it, you know. And that's why I'm voting.
Vinny, thanks very much. And since we're having a conversation about age, can I ask you how old you are?
So I am a 35-year-old white cisgendered male.
Vinny, well, thank you very much, Vinny. Really appreciate it. And the takeaway from Vinny, I suppose, and maybe Dean, you can weigh in on this, is that don't assume that you are ineligible to vote. You might be. Do some research before you decide whether or not to go to the polls.
That's right. Kudos, Vinny, for voting and finding out that you could. Unfortunately, these laws vary significantly by state. In Maine, you can vote in prison. But in many southern states, for instance, Mississippi, you can't vote if you've ever had a felony conviction, even if you were a minor when you got the felony conviction. And some estimates are that has eliminated 30% of the African American male population from the polls in a state like Mississippi. So we have a patchwork of state laws that really do disenfranchise people for things that happened to them many years ago that should have been, you know, they should still be able to vote. And so it's great that Vinny and hopefully many others are finding this out and exercising the rights that they still have.
Listeners, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to dig into more of certain demographics and voting. We want to know who you are and why you choose to vote or not. Join the conversation by calling us. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello. This is The Exchange. We'll be right back.
NHPR's Leadership Circle is a community of listeners who place a high value on thorough and thoughtful journalism. I'm Sarah Alger, Director of Major Giving. As a member of the Leadership Circle, your monthly investment of $100 or a single gift of $1,200 helps us create and deliver the news you trust and the programs you love. Take a moment to think about the essential role NHPR plays in your life and consider deepening your commitment to the station. Give online at nhpr.org/leaders.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and today we're talking about voter trends in this 2020 election, who's voting, who's not, why. If you voted in person today or if you plan to, how different was your experience from other years? Send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. You can comment on Facebook. Search for us on Facebook by searching for NHPR Exchange, or give us a call. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. We got an email from Lefty in Derry who says, over an hour in traffic just to park. And at one polling place in Derry, once parked, there were still lines out the door. That's the email from Lefty in Derry. We also got a note from Chris in Hooksett. Very long lines at our one polling place. In over 20 years of voting, I've never seen the lines this long. Great job by the town, police, and others to keep things safe and the lines moving. Thank you very much for that email, Chris. We also got this note from Jane, who writes, I'm still struggling with the existential question of how much to continue to question and possibly resent Joe Biden for his handling of the Anita Hill issue regarding her claims against Chief Justice Clarence Thomas. Biden seems like a reasonable and caring guy, but issues revolving him and his family don't point to moral high ground. Listeners, if you've got questions or comments, call now 1-800-892-6477. Our guests for the hour, Kay Kawashima Ginsburg. She's the director of CIRCLE, a nonpartisan research center at Tufts University that studies youth civic and political participation. And Dean Lacey, he is professor of government at Dartmouth and the director of the program in politics and law. So, Kay, let's jump back in with you for a moment, because before the break, we were talking a little bit about youth voter counts and how young people are involved today. Some have said that young people are replacing voting with marches and protests and that they don't trust that their vote will make a difference anymore. We talked a little bit about marches and protests, but what about that issue of trust? Does your data say anything about how much or whether young people have trust in the political system that we've built?
Yeah, so one of the things is that young people have always sort of distrusted the political system. And that's one of the things that's always made young people lead protests and social movements for a long time in history. What we did find, though, in 2008 data, which was another upsurge year for young people as voting bloc and broke the record, including boomers' youth voting record, was that those who felt cynical and distrustful of the government and democracy even were actually more likely to vote if they were involved in a movement. So it's a bit of a little complicated, but I think the idea is that the young people do often feel questioning and angry even at the democracy and how it's working for them and others. But when they feel like they can collect their voice with other young people and other allies, they feel stronger. So they feel actually motivated by that anger to also protest, but also cast their ballots. And that seems to be exactly what's happening this year.
And is there a difference in how young people feel about that very issue if they live in a state that is, when it comes to the presidential election, either solidly red or solidly blue? Or is that consistent across the board, no matter what state they're in?
So young people felt very differently by the way state governments dealt with the pandemic. And that really was another galvanizing moment for young voters this year. According to our survey this summer, 79% of young people said that pandemic really made them see how important it is to select the right leaders for the government. And that did depend on where they lived. So it tended to be the red states. Residents tended to feel like they really have a more negative view of the government. And then the blue states residents tended to feel like they have more positive view of the government. But either way, they felt really how personal these choices can get at the local level. And that's another thing we are seeing is sort of the attention to the down ballot races, even to the city council level among a lot of young people. You see actually a lot of teenagers speaking out at city council meetings these days. And that's how interested they are.
Certainly a personal decision on how or whether to vote. Worth mentioning that if we do see long lines today, it might be in part because a lot of people want to vote, and that's great. It might also be because people are spaced 6 feet apart in keeping with social distancing requirements. So lines may seem longer, but they also might be moving quickly. So don't let the length of a line deter you from voting. And let's talk to Debbie in Hillsborough. Debbie, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to comment on how well organized the Hillsborough officials had the voting area. When I got there, there were not very many parking places and lines out the door. And I thought, boy, this is going to be good for an hour or so. And it was really, really well organized. They have put a lot of effort into it, and it shows. They should be very pleased with themselves. And it was great to see so many people voting.
And Debbie, are you typically voting with one party or another? Are you a swing voter? How did you go about making your choice today?
Well, I'm a registered independent, plan on keeping it that way.
Go ahead.
It was tough. I, quite frankly, didn't want to vote for either one of them. My theory has always been we should be allowed to vote for none of the above and force the parties to come up with a viable candidate. But none of the above is never an option.
And so who did you choose? If you feel comfortable saying, you can tell me to take a walk, but I have to ask.
No, I voted for Biden. Lesser of two evils. That's the only thing I can say.
Well, Debbie, we appreciate your insight. Thank you very much for calling. We also get this email from Charles, who says, I voted in Keene, Ward 3. Over 300 people had already voted a little after 9 a.m. Voting was quick and very well organized. So another vote in the very well organized column from Charles and Keene. Thank you very much, Charles. If you have emails or a comment that you'd like to send in by email, our address is exchange@nhpr.org. And Dean, let's turn the focus for a moment to older voters. How do they seem to be voting nowadays? And is the way they're voting now different from how they've previously voted?
Well, there's some early evidence that older voters are less Republican in this election than they have been in prior elections. Older voters have generally been among the more reliable Republican voting blocks, but you know, early polls suggest that early voters are not as thrilled about Donald Trump. And of course, voters are seeing two candidates who are in their 70s, and I think older voters may see a bit more kindredship with these two. And then the questions about is one of them too old to be president are, of course, moot with that demographic.
Mm-hmm. And is there a particular issue that is motivating seniors to vote one way or the other?
Well, I think COVID and the COVID response, and especially at the local level, related to that healthcare, what's going to happen with healthcare? I think anybody who's a senior understands the vast expense of healthcare and those issues primarily. But I think seniors also pick up the issues that their kids and grandkids or younger generations are also invested in, which would include the cost of college education, the climate. And I think race issues, you know, as we've talked about, everything that's motivating younger voters also is weighing in the minds of older voters.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Todd in Concord. Todd, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. What's up?
So I'm the state director of AARP New Hampshire. Great program. Thanks for putting it on. Just wanted to say, as part of our campaign of protecting voters 50-plus, we, in consultation with the Secretary of State's office here in New Hampshire, sent a mailer out to all of our 225,000 members advising them how to seek and obtain and return absentee ballots. So just want to put that out there and also say, you know, the most reliable voting block historically has been the 50-plus in every election. But it's great to see great turnout across the board, but we have every expectation the 50-plus are going to do what they usually do.
Well, Todd, thank you very much. And, yeah, question about seniors utilizing absentee voting. Because, Dean, you mentioned that, COVID-19 is a real concern among seniors in nationally. Are they taking advantage of absentee balloting because they're concerned about COVID?
I think so. Both of my parents voted absentee because of concerns about COVID. Both of my wife's parents voted absentee because of concerns about COVID. And I think that the allegations that absentee ballots or that the election process in general will be tainted and fraudulent does a real disservice to the local elections officials who we know and we've heard from your callers are doing a terrific job in this election. There's really no evidence of voter fraud in the absentee process or in early voting. And it's important to have those different venues to voting available, especially in a time like COVID and especially to our seniors.
We get this email from Peter who says, "We will walk into a grocery store, a restaurant, a random box store, go to work, but somehow walking into a voting booth for a minute is a crisis. I'm going to be voting in person and be just as comfortable doing that as anything else I do day to day." Dean, it seems like Peter's email speaks to how, you know, voting is not more or less safe than going to any other place indoors. But nevertheless, there have been concerns, valid concerns, from people of all stripes. Who don't want to be in an enclosed space during this COVID-19 pandemic. Has Peter's sentiment been common in, your research?
Well, I think so. There are a lot of people who think voting should be one day only. But, you know, these are difficult times, and it's not just going inside. It's standing outside for a long time, especially up here in the north where we have snow on the ground today. And for people whose immune systems may be compromised, who are at greater risk. So I would encourage compassion. You know, I have my my son-in-law is in the military and was able to get his ballot by just going online, filling out a form, and the ballot was mailed to him. It should be that easy for everybody.
We've got a lot of people who hope to chime in on this conversation. I want to talk to some callers. Let's talk to Micah in Concord. Micah, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey there. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, so I think I'm a younger generation, 28 years old. I would say I'm a moderate Democrat, but I think it's incredibly important to vote on the issues that you, it resonates with you. I want to be a good kind of role model for my students at Plymouth State University to go out. It doesn't matter where you stand and what your opinions and perspectives are on life, but it's important to kind of put your voice in there, and I think it's just incredibly important for me on healthcare, climate change, and just kind of our talking to some relatives not in the U.S., just seeing how their perspective on the U.S. and our leadership, it's kind of fallen off, and I think we need to get back to a place where we are taking a lead in the world, whether it's with COVID or kind of global crises and other things of those needs.
Well, thanks, Mike. I really appreciate your, comments. We get this note from Brad in Deerfield. Who said, "Deerfield town officials knocked it out of the park. The setup was perfect. Is there any more movement towards ranked choice voting outside of the few states that currently use it?" I don't know if you have any insight to that, Dean. I think Massachusetts is voting on a ballot initiative about ranked choice voting, but my knowledge of that is limited. Do you have any knowledge of that?
You know, yes, but it's ranked choice voting is really limited to Maine, Massachusetts. There are a few Pacific Rim states that are considering it. It's something to consider. There are alternate forms of voting that would also be viable. For instance, approval voting, where you could go in and vote for as many as you want. That is, you could vote for Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Now, a lot of people oppose that in principle because they think, well, don't you have twice as many votes? But you really don't. What you're doing with approval voting, especially when you have multiple candidates on the ballot, is not being forced to choose one, but there's a lot of evidence that approval voting eliminates the kind of overvote errors that are so common, where about 1 or 2% of voters get rejected because of, what we call overvoting or mistakenly marking two circles next to the next to a ballot, which was such a big problem in the 2000 election in Florida. So the U.S. has a very peculiar electoral system with plurality rule determining which slate of presidential electors then get to cast their electoral votes. And we know, political scientists know, that this sort of electoral system tends to reduce turnout.
We get this email from Ginger in Hooksett who says, there may have been a line at the Hooksett polls early today, but at 9 a.m. I encountered no wait at all. This is the first time in 26 years of voting that that has ever happened to me. I give the Hooksett election officials enormous credit. Amazing. That's the note from Ginger in Hooksett. If you've got questions or comments, join the conversation. Phone number 1-800-892-6477 and our email exchange@nhpr.org. Kay Kawashima Ginsburg, let's turn to you again because you recently conducted a survey of working class youth and found that nearly 20% of young people say they don't think they know enough to be able to vote. I believe that was 2 years ago, but I don't know how much education plays a role in this. What do you think?
It totally does. But I would also note that we asked this question again to the general population of youth this year, and 19% said the same thing. So it's actually pretty widespread perception. That said, education really matters, socialization into voting and election and civic engagement generally. So in 2018 survey, we talked to working class young people who sometimes had, you know, immigrant parents. They were U.S. citizens, but parents didn't have the right to vote or grew up in communities where political engagement was really not something people did. So then people were asking, you know, how do I even fill out the form? So we found that among these young people, they were very unlikely to use online registration, even when there was available to them, or, you know, text reminder about voting, and generally felt like they really couldn't keep up with the issues. And they also were likely to say they don't really have an opinion on something. So there are definitely about one fifth of young people were completely leaving out from just even thinking that they should have a voice, and they don't really have a lot of opportunities in school, for example, to explore both sides of the issues that are sometimes contentious and understand how to form an opinion based on what they really think. New Hampshire is really known for the independence of their political opinion, but that's really not the atmosphere every young person have in every state. Not every young person have that really active political discussions that folks in New Hampshire often have at their dinner table. So, you know, young people in New Hampshire is lucky, but other young people really kind of grow up in the vacuum of political engagement and political discussion. Then they, of course, don't feel ready just because they turn 18 one day.
Mm-hmm. And are there key races in the country where the youth vote is going to be particularly important?
Oh, so many. So New Hampshire has been always one of those states, and we also ranked it. We use public indicators to really figure out where young people can be pivotal. That includes, you know, updated list of competitive states and House races and Senate races, as well as sort of how the voting pattern has been in the last few elections. One of the ways in which young people can be that pivotal vote is, especially in close competition, how they choose one candidate over the other by a large margin. And because they tend to choose Democratic candidate in many cases, not all, young people really have that significant net vote kind of advantage over older groups that might be really split in half in those competitive races. So some of those states have been places like North Carolina and Georgia, as well as Michigan, Minnesota, New Hampshire, where young people really have inserted a lot of power. One of the states that's been really interesting to watch this year is actually Texas, where it wasn't even named as a really competitive state by us earlier, nor has it had a record of high voter turnout. But in the early voting period, 18 to 29-year-olds' early votes already surpassed the total votes cast by young people in 2016 by over 100,000 already. So it's expected to be probably the record turnout in Texas. Texas youth did triple their midterm turnout before in 2018 too. So it's definitely a state to watch right now.
And Dean Lacey, what do you make of Texas? That's been really important for those watching this presidential contest.
Yeah, Texas is going to be a close state, much closer than the Republicans would like to see, given that it's traditionally been a Republican state. And I think it's right that that the closeness of previously solid red states, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, Texas, is probably driven by the youth vote. Also, the Hispanic vote in a state like Texas. And we don't know to what extent that's just a general activation of youth voters, or maybe it's the Beto O'Rourke effect that's carried over where he mobilized a lot of young voters. But any place that you have urban areas like Northern Virginia, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, Atlanta, the various urban areas in Texas, these are bringing in young voters who are mostly college educated, who are politically active and who are finding jobs in the tech industry. And that's driving up turnout in those states and also making them more Democratic.
Well, let's take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll hear more about voters in New Hampshire and voter trends in New Hampshire. And if you want to share your story, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can also email exchange at nhpr.org, but giving us a call is the quickest way to get your voice on the air. Again, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Peter Biello, and we will be right back.
Having the right information, operating on facts, is core to democracy, and I value that.
Mitchell Harris of Sunapee on why he decided to support NHPR as a Leadership Circle member.
I just want to get the facts, and I'll make up my own mind, and NHPR allows me to do that.
You can join Mitchell in supporting broad access to accurate information when you give $100 a month as a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle at nhpr.org/leaders.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and in this hour, we're talking about demographic changes and political involvement in this election. Listeners, if you're at the polls or if you've just left the polls, how'd it go this morning? What was voting like for you this year? Send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. We got an email from Kate, who wrote in to say, I took my almost 5-year-old daughter to vote with me early this morning in Merrimack. She wore her mask like a champ and chattered a running commentary that kept up everyone's spirits. I took her with me because these will be some of her earliest permanent memories, and I wanted her to see that even though it was cold, even though there's a dangerous virus, even though people disagree very strongly, people still came out to vote because it's important. Everyone around us was friendly and encouraging to her, and she had a great experience. She is so proud of her I voted sticker. She'll remember this for the rest of her life. We can't solve all of today's problems, but our children are watching us and will absorb what we show them. So let's show them positive, constructive behavior. That's the email from Katie. Thank you very much for your comments, Katie. If you've got a comment, email us, exchange@nhpr.org. We're still with our guests, Kay Kawashima Ginsburg. She's the director of CIRCLE, a nonpartisan research center at Tufts University that studies youth, civic, and political participation. And Dean Lacey, he's professor of government at Dartmouth and the director of the program in politics and law. So, Dean, what do we know at this point about voter turnout in New Hampshire in particular? How does it compare to previous years? And what demographic groups are voting and how are they voting? What do we know?
Not a lot yet. I think the early indicators are that turnout will be high, higher than in previous elections in New Hampshire, as it will be in most other states. So we're part of a national trend. I suspect that youth turnout will also be high, as it will be in most states across the country. One of the unique features of New Hampshire's population is we rank among the lowest of states in the percentage of people who were born here. So we have a lot of people who've moved in recently from other states or born in other states, and they tend to become, I think, a little more politically active when they move into New Hampshire, given how much we talk about politics from the first in the nation primary to being a swing state in most presidential elections. So I would expect turnout in New Hampshire to be high among all demographic groups.
Dean, with the understanding that we don't know too much right now about the way New Hampshire voters are doing what they do, what have the trends been in recent years in New Hampshire in particular?
Well, New Hampshire has moved from being a solidly red state to a blue state, but it's always close and turnout tends to be high. One of the reasons turnout is high is because we get the people registered during the first in the nation primary. And we had more votes cast in the primary this year than in previous years. So carrying that forward, I would expect probably record-breaking turnout. Certainly, if you look at Dixfield, Notch, and Millsfield last night, midnight voting, everybody who was eligible to vote turned out to vote, as far as I understand. So if that's setting the trend, then expect high turnout everywhere.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Everett in Plastow. Everett, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for... Hi, Peter. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Great to hear from you. What's going on?
Well, I'm a retired school teacher and presently driving a special education bus of students, and I'm on my way right now to go vote. And I'm going to cast my vote in memory of and in honor of Senator John McCain. And I worked for him for two campaigns. I'm a Vietnam veteran myself. And I just know who he'd want me to vote for today.
Okay. Does that go without saying, or should I ask you explicitly who that is?
That would be Mr. Biden.
Okay. And Everett, let me ask you, why did you decide to wait until Election Day to vote as opposed to voting early?
Well, the only other time, Peter, that I voted absentee was on in first day in November prior to getting on a plane to fly to Vietnam. I couldn't vote in person. Every other time I voted in person, and I'm going to continue to today.
So you're a veteran. You're voting in honor of John McCain, who was a veteran. Were veterans' issues important to you this year, or was there another issue that was important to you?
The other issue, quite frankly, revolves around the other person running for president. I'm just in total shock, dismay, and repulsed by him and his personality and his positions.
Well, Everett, thank you very much, and hope you have a good day voting today. Listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-892-6477. Let's talk to Rachel in Nashua. Rachel, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Can hear you just fine.
Great, because I'm currently standing here filling out my ballot.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it seems like it's going well for you?
Oh, yeah. I just got here, walked in, and no line. It's great. I wanted to say a couple of things. So I'm older. But I came up in a very socio-political family. On my 18th birthday, my mother said, "You're going to register to vote. And I did, and I've been voting ever since. And there's just anybody who doesn't come out today and see what's happening in our world, no matter what you think, you have to vote. You got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important. I've never... Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to ask you the same question I asked Everett, which was, lots of people decided to vote absentee to stay away from the polls today. You wanted to go in and do it in person on Election Day. What made you decide to do that?
I just did. I don't know. It was just, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this come Hades or high water. I have to do it.
Well, Rachel,
I have to be here. I have to be present.
Well, you're present. You're casting it now. We'll get out of your way so you can continue to do that. Thank you very much, Rachel. Appreciate your call. We get this email from Nancy who says, "I voted at Ward 7 polling station in Manchester this morning and got there just before polls opened at 6. There was already a line all the way around St. Joseph's Community Center. Once we went inside, it was a total mess, in my opinion. Lines were sneaking around each other, and it was very, very confusing. Needless to say, there was absolutely no social distancing and lots of backups." That was Nancy writing about Ward 7 in Manchester. Hopefully things have cleared up since then. We also get this email from Kathy who says, "Just returned from Kennett High, where voting went musically. Very well organized with lots of folks there on hand to assure there was no confusion. Spacing was perfect and lines were short and plentiful. This was one of the easiest voting experiences I've had." Thanks very much to everybody who's made comments so far. Kay, I wanted to turn back to you on a question of the youth vote because, New Hampshire does not track the age of its voters, but looking
Correct.
At census data and regional trends, mm-hmm. can you deduce anything about the youth vote in New Hampshire this time around?
Yeah, so we, again, don't know exactly how many youth votes has been cast, nor would we from voter file, but what we get from a large census survey is that New Hampshire often ranks very high on the list of high youth vote states. So again, it's probably not surprising to you all given sort of how many votes are returned for the general electorate, but it is an active electorate. Another thing we notice about New Hampshire vote is that they also vote really independently compared to young people from other states, perhaps blue states. They, you know, in 2016 were some of the most kind of split electorates in the country, especially here in the New England, which tends to really vote on the Democratic side, especially youth vote. But young people in New Hampshire were more like less than 50% voted for Secretary Clinton and 41% voted for President Trump then too. So we don't necessarily expect youth vote in New Hampshire to be completely left-leaning, though from the callers today, maybe they will this year too. I don't know.
Well, let's talk to another caller. Let's talk to Jackie in Ware. Hi, Jackie. What's going on?
Hi. Well, I just was going to give an update. I live in Ware, and I just voted, and the line was around the block. And when I left the polling station, it was still around the block. It hadn't shortened out. And it was really funny. A good friend of mine in Manchester, I was speaking to him this morning, and he's like, oh, vote anytime. There won't be a line. It's a little hamlet of Ware. And so I was laughing when I was in line. So that was one thing. And then I just wanted to tell Dean that, yes, I'm also one of those transplants. And it was really exciting to vote. And again, I was shocked. My town, I think everybody in my little town is out voting today.
Well, Jackie, thank you very much for your call. And you said that the line was around the block. But how long did that line take to clear? In other words, how long were you waiting?
It was at the middle school, and it took us 25 minutes, but it was fine. We had great conversation. Everybody was in a really good civic mood. It's, you know, the best of everything. And a shout out to the Ware poll workers. Everything moved fast. I mean, it was a long line, but it moved. And like I said, I had great conversation. Nobody talked about who they were voting for. I think we're all just enjoying being an American.
Great.
It was a fantastic experience, and it made me proud to be an American.
Well, Jackie, that's great. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. We also get this email from Michelle, who says, just voted in Ashland, and although busy, there was no waiting and everything went smoothly. They were having voters keep their pen rather than try to sterilize pens between people, which was appreciated. Fingers crossed for a brighter future for America and the world. And we get this email from Evan, who says, my wife and I had drastically different voting experiences in Hooksett this morning. She wanted to get to the polls as soon as they opened and ended up waiting for over an hour to get in. I went 2 hours after they opened, and I was in and out of the polls in under 10 minutes. Listeners, thank you very much for your comments. Keep them coming. Phone number 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange at nhpr.org. So, Kay, you've been looking at youth civic participation. What's the trend going forward? Where do you see it going in years to come? Is it going to increase? Do you see signs that maybe it'll stay the same? What do you think?
You know, I think you can expect an increase for a couple of different reasons. One is, of course, youth-led mobilization through movements politics. It's really huge. And what's really important about that is that young people don't wait till they're 18 to get involved anymore. So 18 is no longer that kind of gate into the political life, but you see 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 16-year-old organizing their high school and getting really involved in local issues already. So voting at 18 would be really not a huge, huge gate they have to get over. The other thing that I'm seeing is much more excitement around really doing better job with civic education. So one of the callers mentioned this too. Socialization from early on is really important. Even kindergartners should understand why voting matters, why their opinions matter, and really practice that skill so that they're really getting involved earlier on and getting that sense of civic duty and responsibility. And we're seeing more resonance from school leaders and even parents in some cases to really encourage teachers to talk more about the issues that are current and local. And those things will really help socializing young people to really believe in their voice and understand how important it is to participate in this republic, because that's how it was designed. It needs citizens to participate and uphold the norms that are really, consistent with our principles, but also, you know, make corrections when some things are not going right. And I see a lot of voters making that choice today.
Dean Lacey, education once again coming up, a civic education of young people. And, you know, you're a professor of government at Dartmouth. So I imagine that the educated populace question here is a really important one for you.
It is. Voting trends have been shaped since the 1960s by three different factors that have this long-term effect. One is that political efficacy, the way that what people believe about the political system, where their response to them has been declining from its high in the 1960s all the way down to the 2000s. So people think less about the political system than they did, and that reduces turnout. but education levels have been going up, and we know that education increases turnout. So you have this counter trend with a more educated population that's better able to vote and more interested. And then the third is polarization. As the parties have moved further apart, especially after 1996, more people are activated and see a difference between the parties and are more likely to vote. But if you change that polarization, if there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two parties, then I suspect you're going to see turnout decline. And education right now might be the one thing that's countering declining efficacy. So an educated population is more likely to know how to vote, where to vote, when to vote, but also to understand the issues and are confident in how they can cast their vote.
Dean Lacey, professor of government at Dartmouth and the director of the program in politics and law, and Kay Kawashima Ginsburg, director of CIRCLE, a nonpartisan research center at Tufts University that studies youth, civic, and political participation. Thanks to both of you for being on the program today. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
We got this email from Rich, who says, my wife and I went to vote in Londonderry first thing this morning. Very long line when we got there at 5:30, and the line was significantly longer. There was a lot of traffic when we pulled out around 6:20. Sure looks like a record turnout to us. We also got this email from Monica, who says, as an immigrant from Germany, I was amazed that Americans seem to have to be prodded to vote. Apparently, they are not aware enough that in many other countries, they do not have an honest choice. That's the note from Monica. Thanks to everyone who joined the conversation today. The conversation will continue on our Facebook page. That's NHPR Exchange. Find us there. We also like hearing from you by email. If you have questions or concerns about polls right now, email exchange@nhpr.org. And you can also refer to NHPR's voting guide if you have questions about how to cast your ballot, where to cast your ballot. NHPR.org is where you can find that voting guide. This is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Today's show was produced by Exchange fellow Jane Vaughn. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our executive producer is Michael Brinley. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. And our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. And our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Thank you very much for listening to The Exchange today. I'm Peter Biello. Get out there and vote.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.